Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, many people in our listening audience, of course, through a number of different news sources are aware of the fact that President Obama has agreed to a deal with Iran that allows Iran to continue their nuclear ambitions. And it seems that we get very little out of the deal at all, supposedly some ability to be able to monitor in some sense what they're doing in their nuclear program. But Iran seems to by far have gotten the better end of this deal, including the lifting of sanctions that will amount to billions of dollars being given or being opened up for the Iranians. Obviously, there are many, many issues surrounding this news item that need to be covered, and we're hoping to look at a couple of those today. I think one of the missing elements of this, at least when we look at it in the United States, is what does the deal look like from Israel's perspective? I mean, it's pretty easy for us way over here, outside the reach of the nuclear warheads, to make one assessment and one decision on this side of the pond, quite a different perspective when you're sitting that close to people who now will, in all likelihood, have a nuclear arsenal. And so I thought it would be good for us this morning to find out what's going on in Israel. How are the people of Israel responding to this proposed deal by the President of the United States? Who better to go to then than Chris Mitchell? He serves as the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News in Jerusalem. He joins us now from Jerusalem. Let me remind you that Chris has a book out as well. He's the author of a new book called Destination Jerusalem. The subtitle is ISIS, Convert or Die, Christian Persecution and Preparing for the Days Ahead. Well, that's certainly something that we need to do, is prepare for the days ahead. Chris joins us now from Israel. Chris, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Kevin.
Well, Chris, let me let you give a general statement about how was this deal perceived among the Israeli people, as best you could perceive it yourself, as a gauge of, you know, what they were saying and what they were feeling, how they were articulating their response to this deal.
Well, I think they feel a lot like Benjamin Netanyahu when the other day he said that the deal was a historic mistake and catastrophic. We are out on the streets of Jerusalem this morning, and we talked to some people, and one of the recent polls that has come out is that 74% of Israelis believe the deal won't stop Iran from developing a nuclear bomb. And I think one man, gentleman told us it's a bad deal because he said sooner or later it's going to reach us. And I think that's how a lot of Israelis feel, like they really feel like they're on the front lines. I was reminiscent of, you know, President Obama said he felt like it was a risk he had to take, but the Israelis are on the front lines of that risk, and they're very skeptical that that Iran will be will maintain its unwillingness to develop a nuclear bomb, and they feel I think they take seriously, Kevin, the statements by the Iranian leaders, by the shouts of or chants on the streets of Tehran, "Death to America, death to Israel," and as one lady said to us earlier today as well, that the world doesn't realize that the Iranians in their brand of Islam, they really do want to take over the world. And so that's sort of the understanding, I think, the real-life understanding that a lot of Israelis feel over here.
Mm-hmm. Let me play a little clip from the president. He is now on a tour going out trying to sell this deal to the American people because Congress has to approve it to some point. Some people say that it even if they don't move forward with it, the president has a pathway to implement it. But apparently so. It needs to be approved by the Congress of the United States. So he's out trying to persuade public opinion to accept this deal. Here's what he said about one of the first points related to why he is saying this is a good deal.
With this deal, we gain unprecedented around-the-clock monitoring of Iran's key nuclear facilities, and the most comprehensive and intrusive inspection and verification regime ever negotiated. Without a deal, those inspections go away, and we lose the ability to closely monitor Iran's program and detect any covert nuclear weapons program.
Well, let's start there, Chris. The president says this deal enables us to be able to inspect what they're doing with their nuclear system, and without it, we don't have any means of inspecting or knowing where they're at. Your response?
Well, it does allow inspections to some sites, but there are sites that that are sort of off limits, and there's a provision in the agreement that it would take possibly up to 24 days for any inspection onto a suspected site that was developing, you know, and part of the nuclear infrastructure to get a nuclear bomb. And as Benjamin Netanyahu said, this is the way he compared it. He said, imagine giving a drug dealer 24 days, and he said that's a lot of time for a drug dealer to flush a lot of meth down a toilet.
Hmm.
And so while some locations might be under 24/7 inspection, not all are. And I think that's one of the loopholes that a lot of people are citing as a way that the Iranians can go ahead and bypass this agreement.
Mm. And I think part of the equation that the president is not addressing in those statements is that Iran has frequently violated its obligation under other nuclear agreements. And so since they have not held to their end of the deal on other agreements, why should we then be under any sort of a notion that they will honor these agreements? It doesn't seem to be reasonable.
No, I agree, Kevin. Consistently, they've violated those agreements. That's part of the reason for the negotiations, but they violated a number of UN resolutions trying to curb and stop their nuclear program. You know, one other aspect of the agreement is that Iranian scientists can continue their research and development. And we talked to an Iranian expert. His name is Menashe Amir. He's Iranian born. He lives here in Israel, but he keeps close tabs on what's happening inside Israel. And he said, you know, after 6 or 8 years, after this continued research and development, they're going to be free to go ahead and, as he put it, in a very fast way to make a bomb.
Yeah.
And so that is not only that's just very disconcerting. That's a mild term. It's just alarming to hear in Israel, but also throughout the Middle East.
Mm. You know, Chris, one statement keeps coming back to my mind when I think about the place that we're at now with Iran, where we've got the president entering into this type of a deal with them. And it sounds shocking to say it, but I think it can actually be proven. But I would say this, that we are sending the message that terrorism works, that if you are ruthless enough, and if you are brutal enough, if you stay at it long enough, that eventually you're going to be invited to the negotiating table. And in this case, these are some of the most ruthless terrorists, the sponsors of the IEDs when our soldiers were in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And many of the soldiers now walking around the United States missing a limb as a result of the basically a proxy war that took place, not to mention all the soldiers' lives that were lost through the intervention of Iran in those wars. And yet we're now sitting down with this enemy, and basically I think we've sent the message to the rest of the world that terrorism works. What do you think?
I agree. And it, those are some of the points you make that make it so hard for the to accept this kind of a deal. It really is very, very hard to believe. And one other point, Kevin, is that in this agreement, four Americans that remain in Iran were not part of the deal. That's one thing. And as you point, you say about the thousands of American soldiers that have been affected and wounded permanently, perhaps by Iranian soldiers. There, in the agreement, there was a man named Soleimani. He was taken off sanctions. Apparently, he's responsible for at least 1,000 deaths of Americans. Now, why we would sit down with him is, to me, hard to believe. I know the argument is that it's and the reasoning of the president and Secretary John Kerry and others was that, you know, you need this deal to stop them from getting a nuclear weapon. But it seems from the conditions of the deal, it's just a matter of time that they could get a nuclear weapon. And as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, it really paves the way for them to get a nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm. I want to play another clip from the president. He makes the case that that this will prevent other countries from wanting to go nuclear as well. Let's hear him in his own words, and then we'll talk about it. We'll give a response.
With this deal, we have the possibility of peacefully resolving a major threat to regional and international security. Without a deal, we risk even more war in the Middle East, and other countries in the region would feel compelled to pursue their own nuclear programs, threatening a nuclear arms race in the most volatile region in the world.
Well, he says that the deal is going to prevent a nuclear arm race. It seems to me that the deal will actually cause a nuclear arms race. Other countries are going to say, well, Iran was able to move forward with theirs, and you know, certainly now we could move forward with ours. What possible rationale now that the United States has given a green light to Iran, what possible rationale can they use to try to prevent us from getting a nuclear bomb?
Yeah, I think it all guarantees a nuclear arms race. And I was listening last night to a former intelligence officer with the Defense Department. He said the arms race has already begun, and I believe it has. Again, we were talking to Menashe Amir, and he was saying that what this does is going to unify the Arab Sunni nations. That includes Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, the Gulf nations, against Shiite Iran. And so another element about this is that the Pakistanis, they already have a Islamic bomb. They have a nuclear device, and that was partly funded by Saudi Arabia. So there could be a sense that Saudi Arabia will use that in sort of a leverage against Iran. And just to help people understand, Kevin, that, you know, part of this division within the Middle East is that Shiite Iran are bitter enemies with the rest of the Sunni nations in the Middle East, and there's a huge schism between these two factions within Islam, and that's so by allowing Iran to get a nuclear weapon, it's going to force these other Arab Sunni nations to get their own, and so, you know, and what it's doing. Actually, in this area, it's just increasing the tensions exponentially. And I'll give you an example of how people are feeling. I talked to a Jewish woman this morning, and she said, you know, I'm not a Christian, but it feels like Armageddon.
Hmm.
And I think that's the sense a lot of people feel here.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some rumors about Israel now talking with Saudi Arabia in order to work together with them to find another way to prevent Iran from fully developing a bomb. Is that true?
Well, it's not just a rumor. They are talking, and they are actually, last month they have, like, perhaps their first public meeting that took place in Washington, D.C., when Dory Gold, who's now the deputy minister of the foreign ministry here in Israel, he met with a former Saudi general, and that was the first time I think they've ever met in public. At that meeting, they said they had already met five times privately. So I think there are conversations going on right now. Even Prime Minister Netanyahu alluded to that yesterday, that those conversations are happening, many of them in private. And also, you need to understand perhaps the context of any public statements by some of the nations in the Middle East that have sent congratulatory telegrams to Iran right now. You know, that's part of a perhaps their culture, that they would go ahead and do that. But privately, it's clear that many of the nations, particularly Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, are very concerned, alarmed at what's happening right now, and they're doing what they can privately and covertly to see what they can do to stop Iran from getting a nuclear bomb.
Part of the proposed deal is the relieving of sanctions to the tune of $300 to $400 billion that it will add into the Iranian economy. What type of impact were the sanctions having on Iran? Were they to the point where they were doing what sanctions are designed to do? And did does the deal like this come at a time where we actually would have had more leverage with Iran?
It seems like we would have had a lot of leverage with Iran because of the impact that those sanctions had on the Iranian economy, which was substantial. But as you say, now that the sanctions relief looks like it's going to happen, and there's a lot of pent-up investment from European companies and others that want to invest in Iran. And so once that they're taken off, that's going to pump those billions of dollars into the Iranian economy. The other thing it's going to do is not only revive their economy, but give them a huge amount of finances to fund their proxy wars throughout the Middle East. They're fighting a proxy war with Saudi Arabia in Yemen. They're arming Hezbollah in Lebanon. That Hezbollah is being used in many ways to prop up the Syrian regime of Bashar Assad. They're arming Hamas. They're trying to take over parts of Iraq, southern Iraq right now. And so what somebody described this influx of billions of dollars as a jihadist stimulus bill. And ironically, that's what we're going to be funding by allowing this deal to go through.
Is the president naive that he would go for a deal like this, or is there something much more nefarious here? It just seems so obvious to everyone else that this is funding our enemies. It seems evil. It seems that there is some sort of evil design here to really put the United States into a very precarious position, as well as our allies, of course, even more so with Israel. How are we to assess what the president has done?
Well, that's a great question. Naivete would be one explanation. Nefarious would be another. I don't know how you can prove the latter, but it does seem to be pretty obvious that it does so many things. I mean, it sparks this nuclear arms race in the Middle East. It provides billions of dollars for, you know, enemies that are not only enemies of Israel and the Saudi and other nations, but there are enemies. I mean, just a few days ago, they were calling death to America in the streets of Tehran. And even the Supreme Leader said it just a few days ago, despite any agreement, you know, they would still be the enemy of the United States. And so it sort of kind of boggles the mind of how this is happening. And I think some people over here are a bit of in disbelief. And I think it's a worse deal than many people expected over here. And so it's quite a shock, I think.
The president, in making his case, keeps referring to the idea that without this deal, then there can be no peace, or there is no other solution, basically, is what he is saying. Is there another solution?
Well, I've heard that statement too. I think there are definitely alternatives between either this kind of agreement or war. You could have a better agreement. You could have no agreement and continue the sanctions. So I think there are alternatives to either or. I think that's kind of a false argument right now. And the sanctions actually seem to be working and working well, and perhaps forcing Iran to go to the negotiating table. It seems, and as we were talking to our Iranian expert the other day, you know, the Iranians are master negotiators, and it seems like they've taken the United States and other the Western powers to the Middle East bazaar and came out the winners.
Mm-hmm. It certainly seems that way from here. There's no doubt about it. I think that when he says that there's no solution, and I know that there's other diplomatic solutions that can be pursued, like the continuation of the sanctions and to use our leverage in other ways in that area. But even if those things didn't work and a military solution was necessary, I don't know why that is completely taken off the table. They either would just say, you know, we are not going to allow you to have a nuclear weapon, and if you continue to pursue it, then we will bomb those facilities, and we will set back their nuclear ambitions at least, if not, totally destroy them. So I don't know why that is such a unpardonable or unthinkable solution to the president, especially when we have a regime that is so terrorist-minded like Iran. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, let me refer to something, Kevin, in the book that I've written about Destination Jerusalem, and I think one thing that people need to understand is, Iran has a theology that they believe they're in the end times, and they seem to want to use any sort of chaos in the world, which they believe needs to happen before the arrival of the 12th Imam or the Islamic Messiah called the Mahdi, and to be able to help the Iranian regime go ahead and do this is almost as I said before, boggles the mind. It seems like a toxic brew if you allow Iran to have this nuclear technology along with this Islamic theology that they go to. It's a toxic brew of that has regional and global implications that we have not seen yet, but I think there's a sense here in the Middle East that there are days coming that we need to really be prepared for.
Mm-hmm. Chris, the end of the subtitle of your book says, Preparing for the Days Ahead. Christian persecution and preparing for the days ahead. How should people prepare for those days?
Well, I talk about in the book, first of all, I think it's to watch and pray, especially be in the days that we're living in now.
Yes.
I cite two authors that kind of describe the days we're in. Charles Dickens said it was the best of times and the worst of times. I think we're seeing great light and great darkness at the same time.
Mm.
And Isaiah said in chapter 60, Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you, and deep darkness the peoples. So it looks like we're going into, we are certainly in dark and dangerous days, but they very likely might get worse. So watching and praying is one thing. Looking up for your redemption draw nigh, because when Jesus said there'd be wars and rumors of wars and nation rising up against nation, it certainly seems to describe the days that we're in now. And so I think girding our hearts, guarding our minds, is something I think that we need to do to prepare for what's coming.
Amen. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this important issue, taking time out of your very busy schedule to do so right there in the Middle East itself. We really appreciate you doing that. I want to make sure that I mention your book here at the close of this segment as well. But thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this.
You're welcome, Kevin. Great to be with you.
Okay. That was Chris Mitchell, and Chris serves as the Middle East Bureau, the Bureau Chief for CBN News in Jerusalem. He's also the author of a new book called Destination Jerusalem, ISIS, Convert or Die, Christian Persecution, and Preparing for the Days Ahead. You can get a copy of that book wherever good or fine books are sold, just go ahead and type in that title or Google that, Destination Jerusalem. And the name is Chris Mitchell, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L. And you'll be able to get a copy of that book for yourself.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.